On Point, hosted by Peter Van Aartrijk. Conversations with interesting and informative experts on technology, branding, culture, social media marketing, and other great topics.
Hello again, everybody. I'm Peter Van Aartrijk, your host for On Point, a podcast brought to you by our good friends at Insurance Journal. And today I'm talking with Dave Trauka, the CEO of InsureBank. Welcome to the show, Dave.
Thanks, Peter. Thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah. It's a cool topic we're talking about. For those that want to check out InsureBank or haven't been there yet, it's a bank for the insurance industry, particularly the independent agent and broker channel, which Dave will talk about a little bit here. It's insurebank.com, no E in insure and a C instead of a K in bank, insurebank.com. And Dave, there's a theme that's there's a couple themes that have emerged in recent weeks and months as I've run into you at conferences. One of them is you do a lot of speaking to agent groups, and I'm sure it's a blend now of age groups. Still a lot of gray hairs in the room. Are there things you tell them? Like if you could say, hey, you know, if I could have a chat with my younger self, what would I say? What would I have done differently when it comes to preparing the agency for a sale or preparing the agency for an internal perpetuation or just plain old growing more efficiently and growing bigger from an organic standpoint? And so I know it's kind of a general theme, but I thought that was very clever. If you could have a chat with your younger self, as an agency owner, what would you say?
Yeah, Peter, thanks. I do speak to a lot of agencies and agency principals and aspiring principals all over the country. We always talk about planning for the event that you foresee. If you want to sell your agency one day, or you want to bring family or management into the agency through perpetuation, or whether or not you want to grow, or just sort of go on autopilot. Everybody has different opinions, but what ends up coming up over and over again is are folks in the audience who say, if I had known this back when, I'd be so much better prepared for what I'm hoping to accomplish. And this sort of idea of what might I say to my younger self is, sort of this recurring theme, as you mentioned. And, it's easy when folks, get a mulligan, they'd say, I'd probably plan better or have a better work-life balance or something like that. But when you start focusing on specific business decisions that were made or not made, a lot of times it focuses around, did I actually achieve the value creation in my agency that I aspire to? Did I really accomplish all the things that I might have done by focusing in on increasing the value of my company? And sometimes that comes up in a variety of discussions. The decision to hire producers or not hire producers, or to make investments in technology or not. Because at the end of the day, when we talk to agency principals, we're always trying to focus in on, if you make a business decision, how does that impact the value of your agency? Because every dollar of revenue you create or every dollar of expense you save has a multiple tied to it, right, of value that one day you hope to harvest either through a perpetuation or a sale. A lot of these business decisions that, either got done or didn't get done have an impact on that value.
Okay. So what are some of the things that you feel are common, like you said, mulligans, like things you hear, whether they're mistakes or just decisions? And I know it all often gets twisted up in the whole personal lifestyle thing, like the cars they drive, the country clubs they quote unquote invest in, and so on. Some of these things are very much lifestyle, and it is what it is. But other things, maybe there are some big buckets of things they invested or didn't in. Are you seeing areas where there might be some major regrets?
Yeah, I think the single biggest topic that comes up is around the staff development or grooming my successor sort of discussion, which, you know, many of our agencies were passed through the family. And what a lot of principals are finding now is that perhaps the next generation isn't as enamored with the independent insurance business as perhaps they were. And or there is no offspring to take over or no family members to take over. And so grooming a successor who's not necessarily the most apparent one is one of the things that folks look back and say, gee, if I had maybe invested in person A or person B, I might have more options today as a, you know, as I approach retirement. And optionality, you know, the ability to have more than one plan of action, or more than one option, is critical when folks are thinking about perpetuating or moving on to the next stage of their life. And so this talent development, and it's not just sales talent. When we talk to agency principals about talent development, they always seem to think in terms of, well, my producers, if I can have my producers be more productive, that would be good. That would be developing talent. And instead, what we always like to talk to folks about is, well, wait a second, isn't there talent to be developed for future management and future ownership? And how do you get those folks in the frame of mind to be an owner? And as they all can readily attest to, being an owner is a lot different than being an employee. And so I think one of the things that pops up when we have these discussions with principals is the fact that they regret perhaps not identifying that person early or giving them the tools or support to become a future owner. And what that results in is less options at the end of the day. And so that would be the biggest one, I think, and there are a number of others.
Okay. So investing, so identifying people who could one day be in management, because you're right, I think agents are typically very good at sales. They're not so good at sales management, and they might be good at a couple of technical things, but maybe not being the owner of a business which happens to sell insurance. And so, you know, there's all different sides of that equation, but to your point, just because somebody's good at production, as we say in the insurance business, doesn't necessarily make them a business owner who can talk about vision and, you know, innovation and moving the agency along and that sort of thing. So what is required to, let's say you're in your 50s, I mean, what is the average agency owner now? 61 or 59 or something like that, Dave?
I would say close to 60 for sure, yeah.
Okay, 60, and then maybe there's some folks that aren't family necessarily, but they're in the agency. Maybe they're in their early 30s or late 30s that could potentially be the future owner. How do you know, and what do you do next? Like, let's say you could go back in time. What would you have done? Would you have set up some kind of ownership transfer plan based on certain goals or how the agency has done valuation-wise or things like that?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things that, you know, that can be done. It depends on the people involved, obviously, but the getting the identified person, the talent, to appreciate what it means to be an owner. And owning requires a certain amount of sacrifice, as many principals would attest to. Sometimes the time, the energy, the burdens of managing people or managing a business, need to be learned and need to be focused on. And so, you know, younger folks who want to be owners have to, you know, get a taste of that. And the earlier they get a taste of that, I think the better off they'll be in the long run. And then the question is communication. We've had situations arise where in talking to an agency principal, they said, gee, I thought, John or Sally was going to be my heir apparent. And they left, and they went to do something else. And you say, well, gee, you know, how did that happen? Didn't you talk to them about it? And they regret the fact that they never actually communicated to that person that they indeed were being considered as the heir apparent. And so it's not just identifying, you know, a person who can be groomed for greater things. It's also the process of actually communicating with them what the plan is. And then, of course, putting in place some kind of ownership transfer mechanism. And as you know, Peter, agencies transition ownership lots of different ways. And one of the typical ways that it happens is 100%. You know, I'm going to sell 100% of my interest to you, and you're going to figure out how to buy it. Other ways that I think are becoming more more used are the sort of stage transfer, where I identify my heir apparent, I stage the transfer of ownership to that person in smaller chunks over time, which puts that person in a position to understand sort of the ramifications of ownership, what it means, and to groom them to understand how the P&L works and what the burdens of ownership are. And at the same time, letting the owner, the principal, the selling shareholder, plan their exit in a way that's both tax advantaged as well as, you know, fits into whatever emotional stage they are in their own future retirement. So those are things that I think are part of the equation as well. It's identify, communicate, structure a transition, and then actually execute it.
Right, and I assume there's a lot of agency owners who may not have quite the glide path to pull all of this off, and you're talking probably, what are you talking about, a couple of decades worth of time to make all that happen, or could you stuff something like that into a 5-year situation and solve the problem?
Oh, I think you can. I think five. You know, people always ask me when I'm doing presentations, when do I need to start this? And I always say tomorrow. Tomorrow's a good idea to start thinking about things. But the reality of it is, a 4 or 5 year window for a well-run agency can be enough. That doesn't always fit with the individual who is being groomed, because they have their own timeline and their own life experiences and things that they have going on. And so there has to be a little bit of a sync between the needs of the buyer and the needs of the seller, both, I don't just mean financially, I mean, as it's called, emotionally. I'm ready to be an owner, and I'm ready to take that next step while the seller is sort of ready to give up a little bit of control and ready to, think about the next stage of their career or their life.
So identifying an owner is one thing that these guys think about in terms of going back in time. Are there other buckets of things you see, Dave, with, maybe capital improvements or I should have, would have, could have done this, other themes that emerge?
Yeah, I think one of the things that people, historically, Peter, if you ask an agency owner, how they're valued and what's the value of their agency? The old school methodology would have been, 2x annualized commission revenue, and that's what my agency's worth. And that is really not as applicable today as perhaps it once was, because what we're finding when agencies are valued, and I always like to talk about it in these terms, every dollar of revenue you make is not really created equal. And so some streams of business are more profitable. They generate more cash flow, and cash flow is what makes value happen, right? So some of the decisions are around, would I have invested or changed my behavior as an agency to focus on more cash flow generating lines of business? Well, that's one way of creating value. You have more cash flow derived from, your commission revenue because you are, in more profitable businesses or businesses that don't require as much expense to manage. The other part of the equation is not on the revenue side, but it's on the expense side. You know, would I have done things differently to be more efficient? Would I have invested in a better agency management system or a better phone system or a better computer system? Or would I have, you know, changed my location to be closer or more efficient in how I deal with my clients? Because every dollar that's saved in expense by being more efficient also creates value, right? Because it's sustainable cash flow that's generated. And so when we talk in these terms to, you know, groups of agency owners, you know, sometimes the light bulb goes on for some of them, and they say, gee, you know, I could have actually created more value in my agency by making business decisions in the past that would have, you know, freed up cash flow or made us more efficient. So, for example, if I'm writing business that requires a full-time CSR to manage it as opposed to a different line of business perhaps that only requires half a CSR, that would be, and it has the same, you know, revenue line, that you know, that might be something that would create more value. And it sounds really simple, but a lot of the decisions that get made aren't made with the idea of creating cash flow as their, you know, primary vehicle or their primary goal. And that's where the value creation comes from. And when you're at the end of the road, so to speak, and you're ready to transition ownership, it's, you know, it's the value you've created over time that you harvest. And the better run an agency or the more cash flow that's been generated, the more value, those agencies have more options. And, mm-hmm. you know, I always use houses as a, you know, as a proxy for, you know, using examples. And it's like saying, you know, Peter, I'm going to sell you my house. You're interested in it. And my price is going to be based on what I think the house is worth. Now, you look at my house and you say, Dave, you need a new roof. You need new shutters. Your front lawn is, you know, has no grass on it. And I say to you, yeah, but I'm giving you the opportunity, Peter, to buy this house that you can put money in and make really valuable. And a lot of times there's agency principals who, when they're selling their agency, they say to the buyer, well, if you do all these things I should have done, it'll be really valuable, and you should pay me for that opportunity. And instead what they should have been doing, perhaps in hindsight, is fixing those things themselves or making those investments themselves. You know, in my case, you know, fixing the roof before I sell it to you because you will, you know, be able to pay me a higher price because you see more positives in my home. Same thing with an agency. If you see more positives, better technology platform, better, you know, better trained producers, a good quality staff, you know, that may be more attractive to a buyer. And so agencies that exhibit those sort of characteristics are more likely to have greater options, either options to grow, options to, you know, transition ownership, harvest value, whatever might be important to that particular agency principal.
Dave, do you see people regretting the whole rent versus own situation too? I mean, from personal experience, I wish we had bought ourselves a, you know, an office condo or townhouse situation. The rent does add up, and I know that you guys finance a lot of these owner-occupied scenarios. But, you know, it's one of those things, Dave, where you have a cost, you know, a cost of a mortgage, you have a cost of rent payment, and sometimes the rent can give you more flexibility. But at the end of the rainbow, it's one less thing, one less asset the agency has in terms of real estate. What do you see out there in that respect?
I think Peter, there's you know, the easy answer, which is, you know, sort of a cop out, is it depends. And what it depends on is if you're a growing agency and you expect to have more people, you need the flexibility of space to grow. Well, you might not be a buyer, you might be a renter. That said, one thing you know about paying rent is it goes to somebody else. And if that somebody else can be you and your partner or you and your spouse as the owner of a building who leases it to the agency, well, that can be a wealth-creating vehicle. And, you know, in circumstances where the plan makes sense, the growth plan, the location plan, the infrastructure of a building, we finance a lot of owner-occupied buildings because most agency principals will view them as really positive wealth-creating vehicles. The other thing it does is it, and we always suggest that folks have those purchases outside of the agency, not as an asset within the agency, although some, either is fine. It just makes the agency financials much more attuned to the insurance part of the business as opposed to the maintaining real estate as, from an expense standpoint. So that for the most part, what we would see is you and I as partners in our agency buy the building that we lend lease to the agency, and the rent covers the mortgage, and the creation of wealth in the equity in the building is, keeps it all in-house. That works in most cases. But if I ever owned an agency principal who foresaw a lot of growth and I needed more space, would I prefer the flexibility of being able to move my operation to bigger quarters in the event I hit my growth targets, or if I were going to buy other agencies or other books or other ad producers, I might want that flexibility. So it depends on the situation. But for a stable agency in a stable real estate market, oftentimes, purchasing the building they're in is a good thing. And we've had folks sit in, meetings and say, I bought it too late. I should have bought it earlier. I should have pressed for an option to buy, things like that. And those are, some of the regrets that sometimes principals will have about their real estate.
Okay. All right, Dave, we're almost out of time, but I do want to ask one more question. As we look at higher interest rates in 2018, I'm curious about your read on, and the M&A activity going on, which had been pretty healthy for years running now, but also, you had mentioned at a conference recently, I think, about the concept of seeing more agency owners interested in building the agency organically versus what you called inorganic or kind of an acquisition kind of growth mode. Can you comment on those things?
Yeah, I think when you look at, sort of planning ahead, an agency principal can grow in a couple ways. And when I define growth as is growing my value. Right, so value creation. And so I can do that as a principal of an agency by buying another agency or buying a book of business. That would be inorganic growth. That's something where I'm buying something else that another person has developed, and I'm going to add it to my to my business. And there's a capital outlay, there's a return on that, less the cost of capital. And, a lot of growth strategies are built that way. The other way you grow is through organic growth, right? You sit and say, I'm going to do this myself, and I'm going to invest internally in producers or marketing or, advertising, whatever it is, it's going to gin up my business internally so that I have growth. The return on organic growth is usually higher than on inorganic growth because the cost of capital is a little different. And so what we see are a lot more attention being paid now to growing producers. And one of the challenges that agency principals have in that topic is having available working capital to bring somebody in while they get either started or they wind out of a non-compete or they have a ramp up period, and being able to afford that ramp up period with available working capital is sometimes a challenge. And from time to time, we will be involved. We would lend agencies money to bring in producers, which spreads the cost of the the working capital over a couple of years, so they're not straining their day-to-day operating budgets to bring in new producers. And hopefully by the time the loan comes due, the producers are all well on their way to being additive. But organic growth, that's the purest return on. Those are the best returns that agency principals can receive on their on their value creation. That cash flow that's generated organically has a lot more oomph to it when you're an agency principal, because you're not either borrowing money to make an acquisition, or you're not absorbing costs associated with an acquisition and things like that.
Okay. Well, Dave, thanks so much for your time, and we'll see you on the circuit going forward at industry meetings. And keep up the good work, my friend.
Yeah, thank you, Peter. I appreciate it.